All right, so we are just a couple days away from Apple's event, finally. And instead of me just telling you everything we're going to expect, I am joined by the wonderful Benjamin Mayo. How's it going, Mayo?
Hello, I'm all right, you?
I'm well. You probably know Mayo from the Happy Hour podcast that he does with Zach Hall, his writing.
Which you were on last
yes,
week.
Yes, if you want to listen back, I've been on a few episodes. So if you like the combination of us, you can find some more. So Mayo, so from a big picture perspective, this event it's kind of looking like it's going to be our first sort of in-person Apple event. Is that your impression of it too?
Well, there's a question mark, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be more in person than WWDC, which was more in person than the March event. But what we seem to know for sure is that the media are getting invited indoors. So they're going to the Steve Jobs Theater to sit down, which is an improvement over WWDC in June, because obviously they did that in the open air outside. Mm-hmm. But it's still unclear, and I think the weight of probabilities rests on it being this outcome, is that they're going to be inside, but they're still going to watch a video on a screen. Like, it's not going to be an in-person event of old times, which I'm begging that they do eventually get back to. But I think they'll have like a, maybe this time the Tim Cook intro will be actually streamed rather than just, done off screen essentially. But then it will probably phase into mostly a video presentation.
And the clear reason why they even bother inviting the press to California to basically watch videos for the hands-on stuff they want. Mm-hmm. And we've seen in the past couple of years where the press weren't invited at all. Apple would do these kind of secret briefings at their hidden offices in California and New York, but it's obviously easier for them. And it creates like the hype and the rush to get the hands-on videos out to do it all at Steve Jobs Theater.
Yeah. I mean, like when they did the WWC in June, they watched it outside. Then the hands-on was in the top area of the theater anyway. So
yeah,
maybe this time they'll be in the underground, like dedicated hands-on section. Because if they're feeling slightly more comfortable over COVID, they can, venture indoors. I guess it's going to be the big change for this time around.
And so, from what we're expecting at the event, we've obviously got the iPhone 14. But then in the past couple days, we've seen this kind of late breaking rumor that the notch is still going away on the iPhone 14 Pro and the Pro Max. But instead of the two separate cutouts, the one shaped like the pill and the other a hole punch, those will still be there. But Apple's apparently going to use some software trickery to close the gap. So it actually seems like one longer pill-shaped cutout rather than the two separate ones. Is that your interpretation too, Mayo?
That definitely seems to be the leading rumor going into it, right? I think there's a chance that, because like if they're gonna cover up the middle part, that means that there has to be some reason why they did it in the way they've done it, in terms of physically they're separated and they're gonna put a digital screen bezel in. So they're going to have to use that space in between for something, because otherwise they would just frankly save money on engineering and production if they just had a physical single pill shape in the device. So we know for sure, based on all the CAD leaks, that the two sensors are separated, right? So the only question is whether it's going to appear as like two separate holes or whether it's going to be one combined hole via software. And if they're going to do that, that means there's some reason for them putting something in the gap. Now, I think it would be in... I don't think it would be insane for them to do what they've done with the notch all the way up to now, which is just to embrace it and to just have the content flow around it. I don't think it's like horrible, even if it's two separate sections. Obviously, we've seen a lot of rumors and reporting in the last week or so that indicate more that they are going to black it out and put like privacy lights maybe in between the sensors. Yeah.
The privacy lights thing is kind of what we've heard the most about, that's going to be an interesting change, just because, I mean, you and me, Mayo, we've talked about how kind of people get annoyed by the green and orange dots in the status bar now. So moving those and putting them basically right in your face.
Yeah.
That's, some people might not like that, and I'm guessing there's going to be no way to turn them off. But
I wonder if maybe because especially under the Johnny Ive, like the hardware should be true to itself. Like the design shouldn't try and like make up for deficiencies. They should just show it. I do wonder if maybe like when, because a lot of the time you don't have an orange or a green dot showing, right?
Yeah.
So in those scenarios, maybe it isn't shown as a unified pill. It is shown as separately, and that allows them to have like the full screen wallpaper and a higher screen to body ratio, right? But maybe when you are using the camera or you are using recording, then it kind of fills in the gap. So it might not be like 100% of the time filled in. Maybe it will be, but I could see them. Like, I know Johnny Ive doesn't work there anymore, but especially under his ethos, using like permanent black pixels on the screen to cover up the gap is not really under the design like principles that he led with anyway.
And I know like seen a lot of people wondering like why this leaked so close to the event itself, but it really just seems like something where we got the whole punch and the pill, those rumors so early on out of the supply chain, but this change, it's not reflected in the CAD drawings and the screen panel leaks and all of that. So
yeah, I mean, this is a decision they could literally change on the dime.
Right. Like, exactly.
They could ship it. Even something like this, they could change tomorrow and ship in the firmware, is just disable it and just show it and just don't do anything special. So, and there probably are plenty of builds of internal iPhone 14 in that configuration.
I do wonder what you think if they do make it so the dead space between the cutouts is always there. That seems like something that, A, it's software, so it could be buggy and have problems. And also, you're a developer, and I'm curious about how developers have to work around that. And because we have the notch and the like safe area and all of that.
Yeah, from the developer's perspective, whether they're going to fill in the gap or not fill in the gap, the presentation onto the code layout is basically unchanged from the notch, because the safe area basically defines a top inset, so you know, like 44 pixels is what it is on the current phones, and so basically apps know not to put anything important in that area because it might be cut off by either the notch or the rounded corners at the edges of the screen, right? So on the iPhone 14, we're expecting the extent of the cutout to be lower down, because obviously it's detached at the top and it's still the same thickness, so it's going to go further down the screen. So the only change to apps will be the safe area top inset will be reported as 50 pixels rather than 44.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, I don't think it really has a big impact. Apple certainly has more of a job to like adjust the software for it. For instance, you know how notifications come down from the top of the screen right now as like little banners? Where it might look pretty ugly if like the banners come from the top of the screen, but first they then have to be like occluded by the pill and hole punch. And maybe they've done some reworking so it like emanates from below that area and stuff. But in general app compatibility terms, it shouldn't be an issue. On the privacy lights thing specifically, in terms of what they're going to fill inside, I do think there's a somewhat like counterproductive element to it, in that one of the reasons that they do the green LED on the Mac is the green LED is like made in hardware, so it cannot be hacked and faked to be turned off, right? So if the camera is receiving power, if the camera module is receiving power, so is the green LED. But on the iPhone, it's going to be rendered in the software, which means it's vulnerable to the hacking stuff, so the kind of value of it is less.
And so from a user standpoint, what do you, because in my eyes this doesn't really change things in comparison to the notch. It almost feels like change for the sake of change, which is obviously something Apple does quite a bit, especially in terms of design. But what do you think? Is it an upgrade, a downgrade, or just
the same? I think it's an upgrade. It's just a minor one, right?
Yeah.
I'd say it's as minor as when they did the notch change last year and they made it, you know, 10% thinner or whatever they did. It's just a slow quest to get to 100% screen to body ratio, i.e. no notch at all. And they're not going to do that for several years. So every couple of years, they have an opportunity to squidge it down a little bit. And my understanding of the company, or my opinion of where their design is headed, is, you know, all screen. And that's why I tend to be more on the camp of they're going to like still show the gap, because it brings basically the ratio closer and the overall look is elevated. Like they on it, the whole design of since the iPhone X has been do whatever we can to show as much screen as possible. You know, rounded corners all the way to the edge, trace the edges, don't do like a fake status bar or anything. So that's kind of why I like philosophically feel like they are going to leave the content visible behind there. But I mean, I'm not going to, you know, go against the software findings or whatever the reporting. So, but I don't think it's like going to, you know, it's not a sea change in design. It's a it's a nice small aesthetic improvement with basically no functional value, which is fine. I mean, it's like I'd put it on the same kind of amount of difference as when they change the sides from rounded to flat. You know, it doesn't really make any difference functionally. It just looks a bit different, a bit more fashionable, a bit more modern. There you go. Nothing wrong with that.
Then outside of the Pro and Pro Max, we have the standard iPhone 14. No iPhone 14 mini. But then we've got this bigger 6.7-inch non-Pro iPhone that we'd kind of been referring to as the iPhone 14 Max. But more recently, some of the leaks have said iPhone 14 Plus, which, in my opinion, this is something I've kind of been arguing for since earlier this year when the rumors kind of first started gaining traction. The 14 Plus just makes so much more sense to me, I think, than the 14 Max.
Why do you think it makes more sense?
I think it makes more sense, A, because the Plus did really well with the 6 Plus and 6S Plus and all of that. And it signals that it's bigger, but not max in terms of the best, which is how I think Apple usually uses the max with Pro Max and AirPods Max and all the other places we see.
But not M1 Max, because the best one's the Ultra.
That's true.
Yeah. So, like, Apple is very... nebulous when it comes to their naming decisions. It's hard to find logic any of them because they flip-flop around left, right, and center. I think Max or Plus would be adequate. Plus, you could justify based on what you just said. But if they called it Max, it would also maybe... It depends how much they want to, like, push people towards which model. Like, because if you really wanted to, like, market the what we think is going to be $899, right, the 6.7-inch non-Pro version, you'd probably call it Max because then it sounds like the best in the product line. But if they want to incentivize people to still spend the extra money to go all the way up by calling it Plus, then there's like the aspirational element of, well, I've got the Plus, but the Max must be better, even more, right? So it comes down to marketing. I think Plus is perfectly fine. I know some people have said like they're not going to do Plus because that's what they use for all their services and stuff now, like, you know, TV Plus, News Plus, etc. I don't think that really matters.
No,
they collide and clash names all over the place. They could have like. Maybe they should have brought out the M1 Plus instead of the M1 Pro, for instance, but they don't. For as long as I can remember, Apple's naming schemes have been very random and erratic. This one's okay.
We'll see. Marketing names are always hard. Both they don't leak, and Apple will do the exact opposite of what you might think is logical. So
when Max was announced, everyone was complaining because it sounded like MAC, and everyone's like, well, why don't they just stick to Plus? But people get used to Max, and then people get used to this, and then, you know, M1 Ultra comes along, and maybe we'll have M1 Extreme as well this year. Like, I don't think it matters too much in the scheme of things. So then you look at the watches, and it's like Apple Watch series number, but they never do the series designation on any other their product lines. You look on the Max, they denote by screen size, like 13-inch, 15-inch, etc. So they're all over the shop. So they can get away with whatever it's not going to make the product unappealing, regardless of what they name it.
Yeah.
They'll give it an adjective, and there you go.
We are sponsored this week by Declutter. Declutter is the official 9to5Mac trade-in partner, and with the iPhone 14 coming, now is the best time to lock in a trade-in price for your old iPhone. Declutter offers an extended 28-day price lock guarantee, allowing you to lock in a trade-in quote for your iPhone and send your device after you receive your iPhone 14. So you can lock in a trade-in price for an iPhone 13 Pro now, wait until your new iPhone 14 Pro arrives, then send in your iPhone 13 Pro and cash out that money, more money, than you would with other programs. Declutter pays 33% more than other carrier buyback programs, and it buys out in cash, not credit. Hit the link in the show notes to get a free instant valuation for your iPhone and begin the trade-in process ahead of your iPhone 14 arriving. My thanks to Declutter for their support of 9to5Mac Daily and for being 9to5Mac's official trade-in partner. So you mentioned Apple Watch. First, we've got the Series 8, which we're expecting isn't really going to be a big change. The processor will be basically the same performance as the Series 7, which was the same as the Series 6. The only real material change here seems to be this body temperature sensor, which Bloomberg has said will be there, but it won't actually give you a reading of your temperature It'll just monitor your trends over time and tell you if your temperature's elevated and say, go
like a
check it.
System, like, yeah, okay, exactly. Or problematic versus an actual, like, numeric reading.
So how useful do you think this sensor, this health monitoring feature might be in comparison to what we have now?
I don't think it would be as useful as the heart rate sensor, because I think that's hard to beat, but it will definitely be more impactful than the blood oxygen sensor they introduced with the Series 6. So, like, because the blood oxygen thing is basically irrelevant for so many people, whereas temperature, anyone who gets ill in any way, the temperature is such a good proxy for are you ill or not. So if
it's one of the first proxies.
Like, yeah, that and heart rate. So if you can combine temperature and heart rate, you can probably get a pretty good analysis on any illness or, you know, a disease or, you know, COVID, anything. Like, if you get in an elevated temperature, you have an issue. So including the body temperature sensor in there will help notify and track that. It would be nicer if they could give you an exact number, but obviously they would if they could, and in their testing it's not accurate enough, so they're not going to do it.
And the trend thing kind of over time is something some of the other wearables already do. I think there's a couple of Fitbits that do it. That Aura ring, that's what it does. So it'd be nice if Apple could actually provide the number, but that's, in any case, it's just kind of matching what's already there and hopefully at least more reliable than some of those others. And then other than the Series 8, the more interesting Apple Watch announcement, the Apple Watch Pro. This one, new design, bigger 47 millimeter casing, then supposedly a bigger 1.99 inch screen with more durable titanium and longer battery life.
Yeah, so this is the one to be what, like 49 millimeters, 48 millimeters, and that's measured. And when the millimeter measurement Apple Watch is case height, right?
Yeah,
so
right,
you're going from 45 to like 47 or 48.
With this and number. This one is kind of the what was first rumored as like the Apple Watch Extreme, the Apple Watch Rugged, but more recently it's kind of settled more on the Apple Watch Pro, which makes sense because marketing it as something for extreme sports is such a niche, whereas this Apple Watch Pro, that'll be something everybody who wants the best of the best will buy.
Let's say I wanted the best of the best, but that's going to be a big watch. My wrists are pretty
small. That's the thing, yeah.
So I don't know if, like, even if I wanted to spend that much money on a watch, I don't know if I would choose that model because it just physically doesn't really fit my wrist. Like, my wrists are really small. I can just about get away with the 40, 41 millimeter one, you know. I don't pick, I'd rather have the 45 millimeter today if I could have it on my wrist because I like the big, you know, biggest screen as possible, but it just looks stupid on my arm. So I'm not going to be able to choose that model. And, you know, just speaking generally, a lot of women won't be able to choose that model either.
Yeah.
So
it's still a niche, even if the pro, with the pro naming, just purely because the market is smaller of people.
And
who
it's really
wear.
Expensive. Because it's going to basically supplant the current titaniums, which are in that kind of approximate price bracket of, you know, $800, $900. But the titanium is a niche one in the line. Like the Apple Watch is dominated by, you know, the base model sales, including also the SE and probably even the Series 3. Like they probably sell more as Series 3 even now than they do the titanium models of the high end, just because the pricing is so far apart. But I think it's cool that they're going to try, and I think the big draw will be battery life for people because, you know, bigger case, bigger screen, but also lets you pack in a much bigger battery. And especially if you're going on, like, you know, multi-day trips, or you're doing like a marathon, you're doing, you know, extreme sports where you're away, where you're doing a long running workout where the heart rate sensor is continuously running, you can drain the battery on current watches and without too much hassle. I think in a 48 millimeter casing, they can probably fit a battery that can last like 2 to 3 days with workouts on, not just being idle.
Yeah. And to me, the most useful, because I'm not going on 3 day hikes or anything like that, the most useful use case for a longer battery life would be easier sleep tracking and not having to deal with charging right before bed or right when you wake up. But again, 47, 48 millimeters, that's pushing it to the absolute extreme for something anybody would want to have on their wrist when they sleep. So the usefulness of that longer battery is really going to be for the extreme sports and hiking and all of that. So we'll see about how Apple markets and just how many people actually go for it.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be super popular.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they shouldn't do it. They do loads of mags that aren't super popular, but they do them anyway, and they're successful enough that they keep iterating on them.
And then that's really, those are the two biggest, the iPhone and the Apple Watch. That's about all we're expecting, unless you think there's going to be some surprises.
Well, I wouldn't bet on anything, but they could easily, like anything of the other products that we're expecting, new AirPods, new Apple TV update, maybe AirPods Max new colors, even some of the baseline iPad refreshes or the Mac updates. Like, there's no reason they couldn't shove in this event as well, but there's also no reason why they couldn't shove in the event in October. So I feel like that's very up in the air. They can, if they're just doing an hour-long event, iPhone and Apple Watch is by far enough. If they want to do more classical two-hour event, which they haven't really done since COVID was on set, but if they did, then they'd probably be fitting in some other stuff. And they can even probably roll in some service announcement too, like maybe Apple Music Classical or maybe some TV Plus stuff, because even when they don't have anything new to announce, they love shoving TV Plus at the front of these things these days.
It probably depends more too on what's ready to go for an October event versus if they have some things that they were hoping for an October event but aren't going to be ready. Like you said, they can do this event with just the Series 7 and just the Series 8 and the iPhone 14 and save the rest to have a more full October event, or they could do the opposite. Because last September, we got the Series 7, the iPhone 13, the new iPad mini, and I think the 9th generation iPad was that event too. So that was a full event.
And then the October event was the MacBook Pro?
Yeah.
And something else that I can't remember.
So it's doesn't seem like there's any rhyme or reason to when Apple will pick one or the other. But personally, I would love to see AirPods Pro 2. I don't know about you, but...
The base level iPad, the 329 one, I think that's generally coming out in September, like year after year. So that might be something they shove in this event as well. AirPods Pro 2, I don't love the in-ear fit, so mm-hmm. I prefer the standard AirPods range. But the AirPods Pro was more appealing to me when the rumors were that it was going to be like stemless and, you know, really thin, more like Galaxy Buds or something, or like the Beats Fits Pro, that kind of style. But more recently, the AirPods Pro 2 are said to look exactly like AirPods Pro 1, just with like internal upgrades. So that makes me less excited about them because I don't like the stems.
And last October's event, just to close that loop, was the third generation AirPods, the HomePod Mini, and then the MacBook Pros. So,
and the HomePod Mini was just colors, right? Because they didn't.
Oh yeah, that's right. Just new colors. Yeah. So out of what we are expecting, what's coming, what do you plan on buying, if anything? Because you're still rocking like an iPhone 11, aren't you?
Yeah, iPhone 11 Pro. Yeah. I'm kind of due for updates on both the phone and the watch, but also buying a lot of expensive stuff at the moment, like a house. So there's some mathematical equations that have to be balanced if you get my drift. So I don't know. Like I want to, but I also have to buy like TVs and sofas and stuff. So it's a difficult time to balance everything. But I think I probably if I wasn't buying a house for whatever, I'd probably be upgrading both without question this year. Because I think they're going to make good upgrades, and I'm really interested to see the camera system on the Pro models. Because there's a good chance that 48 megapixel sensor, where they're going to do the machine learning to take, you know, every four pixels and combine it down to one. I think that could be a very like marked leap change in terms of outputting the quality of the pictures that it produces. We won't know for sure till the reviews come out, obviously, because Apple says it's the best camera every single year, but you never fully know how much of an upgrade it is until a month later. We'll have to wait for reviews to really know that for sure. But I think the camera upgrades could be significant.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at probably just upgrading the phone. I've go from 13 Pro Max to 14 Pro Max, and I don't think I say right now I don't plan on upgrading my Apple Watch, especially to the Series 8. If I do upgrade, I'll probably want to go all the way to the Pro, just to try it out as a completely new design and all
of
that.
But then that's like $1,000 just for a watch.
Exactly.
That's a big commitment. Yeah.
Because I used to get the stainless steel when they had space black, because the space black just looked incredibly cool. But with the graphite, I don't like the graphite. So the past, I think 2 years, I've just gone with the aluminum, and the Series 7 to Series 8 is just not a big enough jump. So I might go Pro, but hopefully not. So we'll see.
And finally, do you think they're going to show the headset off?
No, I don't think there's any chance of a headset at this event. It doesn't seem... I feel like we'd be hearing more about it if it was ready.
They can. Like, it's obviously whenever they do announce it, it's going to be announced months and months ahead of when it actually ships.
Yeah.
So they have the freedom to preview it anytime they want. But yeah, just the feeling in the air is that it's not ready for this event.
All right. I think that does it. Like I said at the top, you can find more of Mayo on Happy Hour, which is just a great, much longer podcast with him and Zach Hall. Then you can also follow Mayo on Twitter at, where at Mayo?
BZA Mayo.
Then we will be back tomorrow with another episode. And then Wednesday is Apple Event Day. So we will have all the coverage from that as well.